Welcome to the Greg Dwyer Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your host, motivational speaker Greg Dwyer. Be sure to check out Greg at www.gregdwyer.com. That's www.gregdwyer.com. Now on to our show. Take it away, Greg.
You know, you could be the smartest guy on the block. You could know everything about history. You know everything about mathematics. But if you don't know how to communicate and connect with other people and probably get along with other people, you're probably not going to get too far in life. My guest today is Amber Rose Cox. She's an author. We're going to talk about emotional intelligence, her book, which I could not put down. And you're going to want to hear this interview or this conversation. Amber, thanks for being on the broadcast.
Yay. Thank you, Greg. I'm happy to have the opportunity to talk about this important topic.
So where do we start? Where do you think we should start?
Yeah. Well, I think just kind of giving a little overview, like in the introduction of, what is emotional intelligence and why is it so important? And it's become one of the hottest topics out there in work culture.
Yep.
And so, one of the biggest things that affects the financial stability of a company, the well-being, the emotional well-being of all the people that work there is the culture and the civility in the workplace. And so because our environment is such a big part affects us and, how we relate to everything else. And so, what's happening is there's a growing movement of putting the focus more on improving work culture and the environment and the human connection and, so that people are more productive, people are happier, people have a better sense of well-being where they work, which directly impacts their personal life as well.
Yeah, I think the shift is this. When you're kids, you go to school, you sit down, you do what the teacher tells you. They mm-hmm. pretty much prime you to go get a job so that you just, paint within the numbers,
yeah.
do what they tell you, all that kind of thing. But I think that's
right.
changing. I don't think that's the model anymore. And I think if people are happy at work, then the customers are going to be happy. And it does impact the bottom line. Your book says that if people are grumpy at work and they don't play well together, that it impacts financially how the company's doing.
Yeah, it does in a huge, big way. And so, what I started noticing, this was years ago, because I have a background in corporate sales, and I was really noticing, a lot of dysfunction in the workplace and so many people more than not that were not happy, and that really intrigued me on what was going on, what was causing that, and also to find teams and groups of people that actually excelled and did well and what was the difference? What made that difference? And, I found more often than not that people were very unhappy. And so they were, they really weren't productive as, because they just felt, that they weren't valued. They felt like they were just being told what to do. It was kind of like, feeling like not wanting to show up for work, actually, taking more sick time, taking, more days, personal days off just because, they were miserable going to their work. They were miserable with the environment, miserable with the people. And so I found this so prevalent, and I witnessed it over and over again. And so to me, it just became, something that I felt so passionate about and bringing more attention to this topic that I wrote the book about it.
It seems to me, if people are happy at work, it's because of one thing. Now, you tell me if I'm right on this, and maybe I picked it up on your book and I just don't remember it, is that they can identify somebody at work that they consider a friend. They really like the person, and they look forward to going to work. It's teamwork. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It makes a big difference because the thing is, what happens a lot, and I don't want to generalize, but what happens a lot is that people are promoted that are really good at what they have to do their job. And then they get promoted to a point that they're managing other people. And they really, it's a whole skill set in itself and they don't know how to do it. And so what happens is everything deteriorates between the manager and the people that are working for that manager reporting to them, and, you know, the relationships, because, you know, you lead by example. And so the relationships that's modeled in leadership or in management is then infiltrating, you know, all of the employees. And so, you know, when there's the decline in morale and engagement, you know, people aren't happy, then it just affects everything, you know, everything to the bottom line. I mean, you know, a toxic work culture is actually one of the most prevalent and costly challenges today. And, you know, I find it so interesting that this area of focus has really, you know, never really been addressed in a big way. There are companies that are shifting and starting to do that. I think people are, you know, at a point where they have more options and they're looking for more flexibility. They're looking to feel valued. They're looking, you know, for companies that they feel better about working at to, you know, and, you know, it's, as I said, you know, people have more choices than they used to. So they're, you know, it's more important than ever. And, you know, and even like rising stress levels with everything that's gone on in the last year, you know, being able to have a cohesive work environment where people feel valued, people, you know, feel like what they have to say is important. People feel like, you know, they like the environment, that they, you know, like you said, that they're not told, hey, this is what, how it is, this is what we're going to do, this is the way it is. Instead, they feel like, you know, they're not having things done to them all the time. They're actually being included and they have a voice. And so it makes a huge difference, you know, in so many ways. And if companies really think about it, you know, the biggest asset that they have are the people. That's their biggest asset. So investing in civility and promoting a culture, modeling behavior excellence, I feel there should be standards, just like, you know, what people do to do their jobs or the hard skills. I think there should be standards and behavior of, this is what we always do, this is how we treat each other, this is the culture, and have those embedded into, you know, very deep and wide into the companies.
I actually was on a website maybe about 4 weeks ago, and I don't remember the website, but I will tell you what I do remember. I do remember their mission statement, and what they made clear is they value the client, they value the people that work inside, and here are the values: no gossiping, no backbiting, no undercutting. And I looked at this business and I said, this is amazing. Now, the one thing you talked about was the Peter principle. And in fact, it's in your book on page 31, this idea that, you know, someone knows what they're doing. They're very good at the technical and maybe they're promoted, but they don't know how to lead. What do you think the key to leadership is? Now, this is a really important question. Do you think leadership is something you're born with, something you're taught? You think there's some magic formula? What's your take on leadership?
You know, leadership can be developed. I mean, I think some people are natural born leaders. You know, just some people are, you know, naturally, you know, better at other things than, you know, like math or science or art or music. So I think that there are people that are naturally more charismatic. And I mean, we could go into a whole conversation on variables and that, and, you know, how, you know, influences, you know, nature versus nurture, things like that. But I think that there are people that are just naturally, you know, born leaders. And then there are people that can be developed in, because this emotional intelligence that we're talking about, or soft skills, it can be developed. You know, people are born with a certain IQ, but emotional intelligence, that can always be developed if there's a willingness. And I think one of the key criteria is in managers, and that Peter principle, where people are promoted because they're really good at what they do, but then they don't know how to manage people. They don't know how to lead people. And there's a very, very, very big difference between leading people and managing people. You know, leading people brings their best out, brings their strengths out. Sometimes managing people, what happens is people feel managed. They feel like their time is managed. They feel like, you know, they're watched. They feel like they might be judged. So, you know, how do you cultivate that mindset of leadership and bringing out the best in your people, bringing out the strengths? Because we're not all good at everything, right? And so, and how do you bring that out in a way where you create understanding for all the people that are involved? And so you can actually, you know, and also to bring that awareness for the people themselves so that they're acknowledged for that. But not only that, if there's a challenge for a person, you know, bring that to light in a positive way where, you know, they can actually benefit and kind of cultivate something that's a challenge for them in a positive way. So I don't know if that does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I think it comes down to this, and I know you probably heard this before and probably people have heard it as well. People don't leave jobs. You know, they leave managers. They leave people that they can't stand working with, you know. It kind of reminds me of Scranton, Pennsylvania, you know, the television show The Office. Yeah. They kind of make fun of how people are acting with each other. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So tell us about the book. The name of the book is Behavior Self, which I think is really catchy,
Behavior
by the way.
Yeah. It's a play on words, you know. And so it's a hard case for soft skills. And so basically what I've done in this book is I've really presented a case for it, why it's so important. You know, I've done a lot of research at the cost of incivility and the toll that that takes on everybody that's included. And if a company doesn't know the emotional health of their business, their company, it's a huge area of opportunity. They should know what it is, because it's affecting the bottom line, and because a company is only operating at the potential that the people are, how good they feel about being there. And so it really lays that out. It lays out the background for it, the cost of incivility. And then I go into, you know, what makes a good leader, you know, who are examples of good leaders, and, you know, go into that. And also, like, what is the difference between a transactional leader and a transformational, and how do you bridge the two so you have the best possible outcome? You know, I also talk about, you know, how do you bring out the strengths in people? And there's different ways to do that. There's different you know, learning styles. You know, how do you have like a standard for good behavior? You know, how do you incorporate those? How do you have a plan when things don't go right? What do we do? So it's really proactive approach that embeds, you know, behaviors into the culture. I devoted a chapter on stress because stress is, you know, just really derails people. And, you know, when people are, I mean, it's part of life, stress is part of life, but if you have a really good supportive work culture, then you're not feeling the burden of that by yourself, you know. So, you know, the implications, you know, of a very high stress work culture that there's a lot of incivility is that person, you know, ends up leaving. They take it home with them. They're miserable. It's just, you know, I have, you know, private practice, and I have had several people in the past years come in that were just suffering so much stress because of their work environment. You know, so it goes through that. And then also I outline a very systematic approach of how you can incorporate a model of excellence, a model of standard good behaviors, and it's scalable. It's scalable. So it doesn't matter what the size of the company, it can be incorporated.
And that's your gift. You'll go into a company, you'll work with the HR department, you'll work with the staff, you do speaking, you do workshops. So I want to ask you, how do people get a hold of you? Maybe they want to get the book and start there, or they want to follow you on Facebook. They want to reach out to you to bring you into a corporation. Give us that information.
Yeah, so the book is on Amazon, and it's called Behavior Self. So easy to find there. I have a website called workculturesolutions.com. You can find me there. I'm on Facebook. I am on LinkedIn. So those are a few of the ways that people can find me.
Amber, are you finding that HR departments are waking up to this, or at least they're talking about this? Because I know the topic of emotional intelligence is really buzzing right now. The other word is pivoting. Mm-hmm. Everybody's pivoting. Doing things differently, but
pivoting.
You have a feeling that people are saying, hey, you know, we're losing people, we're churning people. People are going in the front door, out the back door, they're not happy, and we got to do something about this. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. I think things are pivoting, and I think that it's becoming more of like, hey, we can't ignore this anymore. We need to, you know, we need to make a shift. You know, we need to look at the culture because, you know, the cost is too great. And I think, you know, what's happening too is as things evolve and things change in our work and our lifestyle, people have more choices and they're wanting, you know, and they're starting to demand more from the workplace. And so, you know, as and I think with, you know, what's really happening too with COVID and the, you know, people working remotely and kind of like, you know, what's being found out is that they're very productive. And, you know, so I think that, you know, looking at things going back, not to the way they were because they won't, that people are looking for more options to work from home, looking, you know, for, you know, more options around like, you know, juggling daycare and time constraints and things like that. So I do see things as pivoting. And, you know, I think there's just a general, you know, overall, like people are, you know, people have, especially in this last year, have gone through a lot and, you know, they're looking for, you know, more peace in their life. And, you know, like I said, the work environment is a huge contributor of, you know, that mental well-being. So it is pivoting and I, it will continue to. And I just see this topic is becoming more and more important in the workplace.
Yeah. There's a couple questions I got. We're going to take a quick commercial, but one question has to do with the drivers. You know, how, you know, not everybody gets motivated the same way. And I might get motivated differently than you are motivated. And, you know, certain like that. The other question is family of origin. And so let's do this. Let's take a, let's take a 30-second commercial. Then we'll come back, talk about drivers and then family of origin. So hold tight.
You've been listening to the Greg Dwyer Radio Show. Brought to you by motivational speaker Greg Dwyer on buildingfortunesradio.com. Do you wish you could sharpen your focus on what matters most to you and achieve more? Then you owe it to yourself to read Greg's ebook at gregdwyerebook.com. That's www.gregdwyerebook.com. Download it today and give it away. As always, we want to thank you for listening to the Greg Dwyer Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with motivational speaker Greg Dwyer. Now back to our show. Take it away, Greg.
So we are talking with Amber Rose Cox on her book, Behave Yourself, and Emotional Intelligence. It's a key topic, very hot. People are talking about this. First question is drivers. You know, I really believe that values, and you do talk about values in the book. And by the way, I have to say this. I know we've been friends for a few years, but when I got the book, I couldn't put it down. And I got two of them. One I got electronically, the other one I got in a hard copy, and I gave it away. Because I knew someone needed to read it. But I will tell you, I could not put the book down. But when it comes to personalities and emotional intelligence, it's not cookie cutter. You know, in other words, this person might be motivated by praise and significance. This person might be motivated by contribution. How do you figure out what is important to somebody as far as their values?
Yeah, and that is a huge, huge, you know, part of like, you know, understanding how people are kind of like hardwired, you know, what they gravitate to. So in the personality drivers, some years back, I took a training with a gentleman that runs a very successful coaching business on the West Coast. His name's Robert Harrison, and he's the training director for NLP of California. Just put a plug out to him. And he came up with this kind of very understandable way of creating, actually understanding compassion for people and how they're naturally wired. So say, Greg, you're someone that, you know, likes, you know, a lot of like options in your life. And, you know, you're working with someone that likes structure much more. They feel much better when they have structure and they don't do well with change. And you put those two people together with someone that really likes a lot of options and wiggle room. And if they feel like there's too much like structure, they start to feel uncomfortable. And if those people don't understand, you know, that the significance in that, they can start to get like really triggered by each other. Like, why are you so uptight? Why can't you just go with the flow? Or why, you know, why are you all over the place? You know, it can seem that way. But when you start to develop an understanding for how people are naturally wired, what feels good to them, then you can create compassion and empathy and not instead of the opposite of criticism and judgment. So that's, it's really important to, and people are all wired, you know, like with different significant needs, some, and values, values are different. Some people go to work because it's more financial. Some people go to work because they really want connection. So when you start to develop and look at like the different dynamics of the human connection between the people that are working together, you really cultivate a different way of seeing each other. And, you know, what these soft skills are about is it's about the human connection. That's what it is. I mean, this is how we're designed. We're designed to really connect. We're designed that we want to feel important. We want to feel heard. We need that connection. And this is all about really developing those aspects of the essence of who we are as human beings and managing those emotions and understanding the differences between people so that it's inclusive, so that everybody feels inclusive, and everybody feels like they have something to say, that their voice is heard, they matter. And, you know, looking at like values and needs and personality drivers, and even like their natural, I have a chapter on the 9 intelligences, like, you know, what we are naturally good at. Like, for example, if someone is naturally, you know, good at math, or, you know, naturally, you know, good at, you know, sciences, or someone is more of a naturalist, like, you know, to garden and things like that. To start to understand those things can really bring the benefits out, and can contribute to a team. Taking those strengths can contribute in different ways, you know, to the whole team. But it just gives more understanding to everybody that's working together, so that, you know, there's not that, you know, it's strength-based. It's everything is coming from strengths instead of a place of judgment and criticism. And really, really connecting with each other.
Well, the word that comes to my mind when you're talking about this is family. So we're coming to work, 30-year-old, 20-year-old, you know, 50-year-old, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We're all coming from different families of origin. The way that we interacted
are.
With our parents, and it's got to impact how we interact with siblings at work and people of authority. It just has to.
Well, it does. It really does. And so part of developing emotional intelligence, and this is so, so important for any relationship, is that you start to understand and create an awareness of what even triggers you or trips you up or starts to grab you emotionally. You start to really, really explore what those are. So because the key to changing something is creating awareness. You can't change what you're not aware of. And then you can go into, you know, how do I regulate this? How do I control this within myself or within a group? And so what you're doing is you're fusing the best of both worlds. You're fusing emotion with logic so that you can have the best possible income. Because, yeah, you're right. I mean, people, you know, we all come from, you know, different influences, different environments, different upbringings, different cultures. So how do you, you know, bring people together in a way that you create a synergy and an inclusion and an, you know, a level of acceptance and a way that they can just bring out the best in each other and be productive within that and really help each other out. So,
I love what you just said. I don't know if I've ever heard it before, connecting emotion with intelligence. I tend to, you know, be more in my head, you know, but then I get triggered.
Yeah.
And when I do get triggered, it just takes over. But I like this idea of being able to balance it and say, hey,
right.
I knew you were going to say awareness, by the way. I just had a feeling.
Yeah.
I just wonder if people are aware, you know, are they aware or are they just blaming other people for what's going on, you know?
Yeah, well, that happens a lot. And here's what I'll say to anybody that's listening. And I'll say this, it all comes back to self. It all comes back to self. So when you start to create that self-awareness, what you start to do is become in control of yourself, of your internal state, of your relationships. And no matter what's going on outside of you, because we can't control the external environment, all we can control is really how we respond to it and how we think about it, which that in turn affects our internal health, our internal state. And so, you know, the key is becoming aware. And a lot of people, you know, I think it's not taking the time or, you know, just, and maybe even, Greg, if you think about, you know, emotions, I mean, that's what we're comprised of. How are we taught to handle our emotions? Are we taught to repress them? Are we, you know, are we taught like, you know, anger is bad or confrontation is bad? And so, you know, how are those even developed? You know, how are we allowed to feel our emotions? We're never taught, really. I think it's, you know, there's this, I, you know, we're brought up and there's this, you know, you know, kind of standard of how we react in certain circumstances. And so just to create awarenesses of, you know, emotions are just emotions. And, you know, I can be aware of like what triggers me, and I can actually inquire, you know, kind of be like, you know, curious about it. And why is that happening? And starting to notice mood shifts. And then it's like, okay, I'm noticing this is happening. I'm getting thrown off. Now I'm going to do something so that I can regulate that, so that I can employ some logic. Because when emotion takes over, we're not coming from a place that can, that sometimes is even rational. And you can see where if someone's really stressed and emotion is taking over, relations deteriorate, attention to detail deteriorates, how we can interact with other people deteriorates, everything starts to fall off.
Yeah. And I feel like an 8-year-old.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like you regress, you know, you regress. So it's like, you know, creating that awareness is one of the key important things. And so for people that are in management or leadership positions, I mean, it's important for everybody. But when people are looking to you and you have a lot of influence, I mean, it's so incredibly important to model, you know, model this skill set. And,
yeah.
You know, because it affects everybody. It's like, you know, throwing a pebble or a stone into a body of water, and that affects spread. So, you know, and attitudes
right.
are contagious. Attitudes are contagious.
Well, one thing I'm learning in my leadership class, I've been in the class since October on Zoom, the key is non-anxious presence. When everyone is losing their head and acting like an 8-year-old, you can act like a teenager. You just have to take a deep breath. Sometimes you might have to walk away. And it also reminds me of Maslow and the pyramid, the hierarchy, and how when we get triggered or something happens, we go right down into survival. Like we think it's the end of the world, and it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's naturally what happens. I think, you know, because we've evolved, and that's a very primitive. I mean, you know, years and years ago, early on, I mean, we were hunter-gatherers and everything was, you know, it was like in that like kind of like fight or flight kind of thing. But as we've evolved, what we know from brain science, what's been proven is that when we're operating and feeling good and calm, we're in a higher region of our brain. And when stress is introduced, you know, the emotions take over, and that the our ability to function in a really positive way starts to decline. And that's brain science. That has been proven. And so, you know, people go into this just panic, you know, mode, the more stress that they feel. And and there's no logic. So what it is and how you regulate that is first creating awareness. And then there's things that you can do, very intentional things that you can do to neutralize that and to stop from further declining, so that you can like you said, take a pause, take a moment, kind of collect yourself and, you know, self-regulate.
Yeah. And it's a habit. I think these emotions, I'm just speaking for myself, can't speak for anybody else, but I think a lot of these emotions are just habits. And I do believe it's possible to break the habit. The first step is to be aware of it and then to have some kind of device where it's tapping yourself or meditating. I'm looking at the time.
Right.
I can't believe this. We got a minute and a half left. Amber, how do folks get a hold of you? Because I have to recommend this book. This book is wonderful.
Yeah.
If you have a business, you want to bring Amber in to do a workshop or a speaking, this is information that's absolutely wonderful. So I'm going to give you 45, 50 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, so my information is on my book, Behave Yourself. You can find it on Amazon. You can contact me at amber@workculturesolutions.com. You know, I'm on LinkedIn, Amber Rose Cox. You can find me on LinkedIn. Send me a message. I would love to talk with anybody about this. I mean, this is such an important topic, and we have the opportunity, you know, to create a movement of compassion, to really create a more human connectedness throughout the world through just, you know, really paying attention to behavior and being kinder to each other. This is all about the human connection, all about how we, you know, relate to each other. So I would love to hear from anybody that's listening, and, you know, happy to answer any questions about my work, my book, programs that I offer.
Excellent. Well, I'll tell you, your timing is absolutely impeccable in this post-COVID world. They need your message. Amber, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Guys, we're out of time.
Thank you,
I can't believe it. We'll have to get back. So just remember this. Stay focused and mind yourself. Thanks, Amber.
Thanks, Greg.
You've been listening to the Greg Dwyer Radio Show, brought to you by motivational speaker Greg Dwyer on buildingfortunesradio.com. Check out Greg at gregdwyer.com. Be sure to download his ebook at gregdwyerebook.com to stay focused on what matters most to you. That's www.gregdwyerebook.com. We want to thank you for listening. Now go make a difference in your world.